Hi everyone, this is Jennifer.
And this is Paige, and this is Big Book Energy.
Welcome back to the show, our second mythology and folklore episode of March. This week, Paige is bringing us a Norse mythology. There goes a cat.
There goes a cat.
A Norse mythology inspired pick. Which I am excited about. I don't think I have anything. What's the title of the book for today,
Paige? The Gospel of Loki.
Sounds fun. Sounds interesting. Sounds like a mischievous time with Loki in the title.
Yes. You're not wrong. It's scathingly sarcastic. Perhaps unsurprising if I were to tell you that it's all from the perspective of Loki himself. We have an announcement to make. I got into grad school.
Yes, yay. Oh, I forgot we hadn't told any.
We haven't told anybody
our
that.
Audience about
yes.
that.
we've told many
Dear
people
listeners.
Individually, but yes.
Yay, congratulations, Paige.
Yes, so I am going to be headed to Ireland here in a few short months to study medieval studies in Dublin, which is going to be freaking awesome.
It's going to be amazing.
I'm so excited. I can't even tell you.
I'm getting excited all over again. It's just so cool. And like, I don't know about you, but like for me, it doesn't feel like it's real that you're going to be like leaving to go to another country in a few months. Like,
no, it doesn't. And I need to start getting on that because it's going to be here much quicker than I am probably ready for it. Because not only am I moving, but I'm moving internationally, which, you know.
During a pandemic.
It's like because I don't
logistical
do
logistical nightmare.
Yeah. I only do things on expert mode, apparently.
That's fun.
So, yeah, in a few months, I'll be heading out in August, so the podcast will be running then. If I sound a little frantic right around then, please just bear with me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know how this is going to impact season 4 at this point.
I'm not sure either.
We may need to be more flexible than previously. So.
Perhaps. At least until I get settled. I'm hoping that, you know, once I get there and I start diving into things and I'm a little bit more established, then things will go a little bit more smoothly. But for August and maybe early September, things will be a little hectic.
But very exciting news, nonetheless.
I'm thrilled.
I know that you had applied to other schools. Have you heard back from all of them yet? And if you haven't, is there any other school that would make you change your mind?
It's a good question. So I applied to 2 PhD programs, one at Notre Dame and one at University of Cornell. Both of them gave me the no, which is kind of understandable because my master's is in library science and I'm applying to a PhD in medieval studies. So that's not terribly surprising.
It's a tough sell.
I did also get into Western Michigan for a master's degree, but I turned them down in favor of Dublin. The only one I have not heard back from yet is University of Iceland, where I applied to a master's of Viking and Medieval Norse studies. So, fairly relevant to today's.
that would be pretty cool.
I might give up Dublin in favor of Iceland. But
that would be pretty badass, but...
Right, especially because...
Both of those options are great.
I really can't screw this one up. But, you know, the Iceland track does come with perhaps a year in Reykjavik and then a year in Norway, where I would go to school in Oslo, which would be awesome, too.
That would also be amazing, yeah.
Right, so it's 2 years for Norse studies versus 1 year for medieval studies in Ireland, so...
Yeah, I definitely did it wrong, because I went to grad school in Alabama, so...
Yeah, should have gone to Italy, man.
That's boring. I should have gone to Italy. I will not lie to you, though, the logistics of going to grad school internationally definitely kept me from doing that. Also, the cost.
Yeah.
So...
Cross your fingers.
Those are the main reasons.
Yeah. Totally fair. Cross your fingers that some of those scholarships I've applied to come through, because that's going... that might be a huge dent in my finances, but worth it.
I will cross all available members. Fingers, toes, arms, eyes. I don't know. Throw that in there too.
Dude, I'll take it all. What all you got?
But yeah, that is our big news. We did have big news today.
Yes.
And I guess we'll keep on keeping our loyal listeners updated as to if you get those scholarships, you get that coin.
Need that money.
Oh boy. Yeah, grad school. Ugh. Such stress. Such stress.
And then I just keep signing up for more of it because I'm weird.
And on that note, are you ready to get into our mythology summary? Are
you kidding? It's today? Norse mythology. I'm loving it.
Yes. Paige is living for it.
This is great. Norse mythology. Something that sort of exists around the periphery of our general consciousness, but not something I think most of us actually know a lot about. We've all heard of Odin and Thor and Loki, largely because of Marvel. And then I think most people probably have heard of the term Ragnarok, but the actual myths behind it, I honestly didn't know much about this particular topic until I decided I wanted to study Viking Age Ireland, see intro, and then I started diving into it, and I have to admit, it is way more fun than Greek mythology is. Just wait for some of these myths. But first, let's go through the boring ones. Here's our creation myth. So this one starts out pretty normal. There is a gap of nothingness between the worlds of Muspelheim, one of fire, and Niflheim, one of ice. But these worlds start to get closer and closer until they touch. And fire melts ice, and from the droplets comes a hermaphroditic giant called Ymir. So, this is where it starts to get weird, right?
Yeah.
While Ymir sleeps, giants just kind of sprung forth from between Ymir's legs and also their armpit sweat. So that's gross.
That kind of reminds me of the Japanese
creation
myth.
Some of these are
just
gross.
Taking your clothes off, right? And spirits going everywhere.
Just armpit sweat. Just ew. So the next thing to come from the melting ice was a cow called Audhumia. I'm not really sure how to say that one. But the cow licked the ice until a being called Buri appeared. Buri had a son named Bor who married the daughter of a giant, and together they had three sons, Vele, Ve, and a little guy called Odin. So these three joined together and they killed Ymir, and then in a true power move started constructing the world from Ymir's corpse. And this myth gets extremely specific. Like, the myth mentions that clouds are made from Ymir's brains. So that's weird. But I mean, for mythology, actually, no, that's still weird. Additionally, they made the first man and woman, though I couldn't tell if this part was from Ymir's leftovers or from something else. So I'll just leave that to your interpretation. So something to note about Norse mythology. There are many different worlds, 9 to be specific. You got Niflheim and Muspelheim, of course, the ones we just mentioned. Then there's Midgard, which is our world. Asgard, which is home of the gods. Jotunheim, which is home of the giants. Vanaheim, which is home of the Vanir gods. Elfheim, home of the light elves. Svartalheim, home of the dwarves, and Helheim, home of the dead who did not end up anywhere good. So this is not Valhalla. All 9 realms are connected by Yggdrasil, the world tree, also something you may have heard of. Now, you may have caught the, quote, home of the Vanir gods, quote, that I dropped in that particular description. There are 2 types of gods in Norse mythology, the Aesir and the Vanir. And like every mythology has taught us, of course, these 2 groups have to fight it out for dominance. So, who is who? Most of the gods that you are familiar with are the Æsir. Odin is the chief, Thor, Frigg, and Balder are, and most others belong to the Æsir tribe. Of the Vanir, only 3 are truly important: Frey, Freya, and Njord. So basically what happens is that the Vanir have access to magic, the Æsir do not. But they come into contact with one of the Vanir, who shows off her magic, and the Aesir want it. But They find that their values of honor and basically rigid order do not mix well with this kind of magic, which sort of corrupted them, and then they tried to fill every base desire that just popped in their head through magic. So they promptly blamed the witch woman and tried to murder her, because that's the logical thing to do in this situation. Well, it didn't work. The woman who they ended up calling Gullveig, which means gold greed, was burned and then reborn 3 times. As you may expect, this caused a little bit of tension between the Aesir and the Vanir. They fought it out for some time, but eventually called a truce, exchanging hostages. The Aesir got Freyja, Frey, and Njord, and the Vanir got Hœnir and Mimir. And this went over absolutely terribly. The Vanir thought that they basically got cheated because Hœnir, like, ended up saying smart things that Mimir had fed him, and then when Mimir wasn't around, he just sounded like a dumbass all the time, and they're like, what the fuck is this shit? So ultimately, they behead Mimir and send his head back to Odin. Well, Odin basically manages to preserve Mimir's head, which, while weird, was a good move because it continued to give him great advice. But apparently, everyone was just done with fighting at this point, so they just opted to all spit into a cauldron, and that created a new super smart being as a way to keep the peace. I've got nothing on that one, so cool. Now, our protagonist, Loki, is a little strange. I didn't see a creation myth for him specifically. He's listed as at least half a giant, sometimes full giant, but is also listed among the Aesir. He is not, in fact, the adopted son of Odin, so sorry, Marvel fans. But not much else is said of his birth in the mythology that I could find. He's always listed as a trickster, and he has some, let's say, unusual children, which we will get into. But the big elephant in the room is that he is supposed to come in on the side of the giants during Ragnarok, which is the end of the world. So again, cool. So anyway, these myths are important to our story because versions of them appear in Gospel of Loki, just from Loki's point of view. So with that, we'll move on and get into some weird-ass Norse stories after Jennifer does Page Presents Fun with Comics.
Alright, so Page Presents Fun with Comics this week. First, I wanted to start off with a very exciting announcement.
Oh?
You already know what it is, because I messaged you as soon as I found out. Oh,
yes, I do.
Lore Olympus!
Lore Olympus!
So, you listeners already know, Paige talked about Lore Olympus at the beginning of this season in our Paige Presents Fun with Comics segment. It is an awesome Persephone and Hades retelling that is available on Webtoon. And it is coming out as a graphic novel! October 2021! Super excited about this because it honestly is my dream that, like, all of my favorite webtoons become actual, like, physical graphic novels that I can buy and I can have on the shelf. Not that there's anything wrong with, like, digital access to these stories, but I don't know. There's just something about having, like, an actual physical copy and being able to just, like, flip back through it. I don't know. Oh, yeah. I'm super excited. It's going to be really interesting to see how they translate something that you just scroll through on your phone into an actual book format. I'm interested to see if, like, not that the style of art will change, but, like, how they, like, present the panels and stuff. I'm interested to see how they kind of interpret that into book form. Apparently, there will also be a new, like, side story or, like, extra story that's included in the first volume. Volume 1 will include chapters 1 through 25 of the webtoon. And you can pre-order it now. So I will definitely be linking that in the show notes.
Hell yeah.
So that if any of you are interested, you can go and pre-order your book. I did it the day that I found out. It was, you know, it's available through a lot of different sites. And I was able to get it, pre-order it on bookshop.org, so I did not have to go through Amazon or through an Amazon-owned company to get my copy, which I appreciate. And that is the end of my brief announcement, so let's get into my actual Page Presents Fun with Comics pick for this week. I'm kind of getting to the point where I can't remember what I've talked about already, so I'm hoping that I haven't talked about this one yet.
Doesn't sound familiar to me.
All right, so this week we're talking about Stray Souls, which is another webtoon. Obviously, I'm probably going to be talking about webtoons every single time. But this is a webtoon written and drawn by Maff, is the creator on Webtoon. And let me go ahead. All right, so the synopsis for this story is: the strings that bind our souls can be used to control us and others. While Aelin is not particularly good at string weaving, her unique soul structure does make her resistant to magical manipulation, which, when you're the last person standing between the Amethyst King and his quest for ultimate power, is a very, very good thing. All right, so that's the brief, like, little teaser for the series. Like you heard, Aelin, I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce her name, but we'll go with it. Aelin is the main character. Her and her friend are in this, like, weird, like, prison school that is designed to turn out powerful string weavers for the Amethyst King. So it's a very interesting system of magic that they're using in this story. It's basically like the strings that kind of, like, bind your souls up, and, like, you can, like, manipulate those and, like, use them to control people, like the synopsis mentioned, but then also, like, manipulate kind of the world around you as well. But yeah, they're in this weird prison school, and Aelin herself doesn't remember anything that happened to her before being in the school. So she has amnesia. She can't remember what happened to her before. And her own ability to manipulate strings is, like, real bad. She's not good at this. However, her friend Miriam, I believe her name is Miriam, is, like, amazing. She's super talented at doing this. But again, Aelin has this very interesting ability of being very resistant to manipulation by other string weavers. There's a reason for that. I'm not going to get into it because that would be kind of a spoiler. So Aelin and her friend Miriam escape, but they are quickly dragged into something much larger after Aelin is pursued by a pair of the King's Reapers. I'm pretty sure that's what they're called. It's been a while since anyone said that name in the comic where I'm at, so that may not be right. But I'm pretty sure they're called Reapers. And they're kind of like his, like, special, like, assassin people that, like, you know, suck people's souls out. Anyway, so she's pursued by a pair of Reapers and eventually receives a token, which has, like, this incredible magical power. And of course, the Amethyst King wants that for himself on his path to world domination. That is the setup for the story. I know Paige usually talks about art style. I don't really know a lot about the art style, but I like the art in this comic.
That's all that matters.
It's very cool. It's very, like, muted colors. Like, it's because the story is real depressing. So it kind of, like, reflects that in the art a lot of the time. So that is Stray Souls. Yeah, it's very good. I enjoy it. Like I said, it is a little bit on the darker side, more depressing side. Sometimes I bring in, you know, happier comics, but that is not this week. But it's very cool, very interesting premise, and I enjoy it a lot. There is some cute slow burn romance in it, if you're interested in that. That's not, like, the point of the story, like, at all. So it's not, like, a romance comic. There's just, like, a cute relationship that's developing in the comic. There's actually a couple, you know, they gotta throw it in there because people expect it.
Yes.
Yeah, so, but it's a really good one. I would highly recommend it. And yeah, that's my pick for the week. Stray Souls.
It's a very interesting premise. I kind of like that.
It is. I would definitely recommend. There's, like, 40 something episodes to binge on now. So that'll be your night tonight. I don't know.
All right. I need something to hold me over until Sunday when Lore Olympus comes out.
All right. You ready to summarize this book for me?
I am. Are you ready?
I'm looking forward to it.
All right, cool. Okay, so as we said, the book is The Gospel of Loki by Joanne Harris, who also wrote the book Chocolat, if you've heard of that one, like the one that got turned into a Johnny Depp movie.
Like, it did. That was a really famous movie.
Yeah. Same author.
It's weird.
Weird tidbit. Anyway, to the book, because I don't care about that stuff. So basically, this book is about several popular myths from creation to Ragnarok, all told from the perspective of Loki. And as you may imagine, if you know anything about Loki's personality, it is scathingly sarcastic, which I very much enjoyed. In fact, I went into this book knowing nothing about it. I found it after Googling books with Norse mythology or something like that, because I did not want to read anything by Neil Gaiman, who very famously has a book called Norse Mythology.
That's a mistake.
What?
I said that's a mistake. I'm going to be talking about that book later.
Oh, okay. So this book came up. Literally my decision-making process here. So I wasn't really expecting much from it and was pleasantly surprised. So this book starts with the creation myth from earlier, again from Loki's commentary, or with Loki's commentary. The interesting thing is that mentioned here is Odin's brothers are never really talked about again, that Vili and Ve, which Loki finds suspicious. Also, Odin comes off pretty ruthless, as I'm sure tearing apart the body of your enemy to make clouds from their brains pretty much is in reality. The other thing that is stressed here is that the gods represent order out of chaos. Chaos exists in Pandemonium. Literally, that is the name of the world, realm, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And order and chaos take turns sort of overthrowing each other. The next myth covered is the battle between the Æsir and the Vanir. There's a deviation here from the original myth. The part about Gullveig is relatively similar, but the Vanir are completely wiped out except for Frey, Freya, and Njord, who join the Aesir. And the part about Mimir's head, that is true, too. It hangs out in a special pond that Odin built for it, and occasionally just spits out prophecy. As you do. Odin
special
learns...
Special pond.
He literally put it in a pond. So Odin learns how to use a type of magic where you can use a rune to cast a particular kind of spell. He passes out all of these runes to the remaining Aesir like it's candy, giving them particular types of magic, which is sort of interesting. But that really leaves only like 20-something gods total after this purge of the Vanir. Gullveig, pretty pissed by being burned alive 3 times, then having most of her people killed off, goes to ground. And no matter what the Æsir do, they can't find her. Now, one of the runes that Odin keeps from himself is the rune for Journeyman, which allows him to travel the worlds super easily in the form of a journeyman. And he does this often enough that he catches the attention of an aspect of the greater chaos called Wildfire. Chaos is ruled by a creature called Surt, which is basically pure destruction in a realm, as I mentioned, called Pandemonium. This little Wildfire creature gets so interested in Odin that he leaves Pandemonium, which is an act of betrayal of Surt, just to meet him. Odin immediately casts a ruin on Wildfire, basically claiming him and naming him his blood brother. This little Wildfire aspect is Loki. So enter Loki, blood brother of Odin. And Loki drops a little hint here about what's coming when he again mentions that you never hear about Odin's real brothers. He's basically fucked. So Loki is brought to Asgard, and literally no one is happy to see him. Odin, however, knows that he kind of needs Loki. The thing about rigid order is that it doesn't leave much room for cleverness. You always gotta play by the rules. And that is where Loki comes in. Now, what follows is a series of myths in the form of chapters, most of which I won't get into, but I will tell you a few, because it's great. So the first one involves a giant who comes to Asgard offering to build a strong stone wall around Asgard, and he'll do it solo in 18 months. This is good. Asgard is basically a series of wood halls, not great for defense, and most of the giants are not really fans of the gods. But he has a very high price. He wanted to marry Freya, who is the goddess of desire. So really should have seen that one coming. Oh, and also he wants the sun and the moon shields, which protect the sun and the moon gods while they're doing their thing. A very, very high price. Also, Freya is just like, fuck no. But Loki tells them we're just gonna rig the game. So he gives the giant 6 months to build the wall. No subcontracting, just this giant and his horse build them a wall. And if he doesn't manage to do that, then no deal. Giant laughs it off. Okay, well, that horse is a magic badass horse. It carries all of the stone needed to build a 20-foot stone wall around Asgard in absolutely no time. So last day comes around, the giant literally needs to put like 2 stones in place to be done. Take him like 3 hours with the horse. Freya is losing her shit. When all of a sudden, a pretty mare arrives and the horse, which happens to be a stallion, is off to the races and very much not working. So the plan fails. Asgard gets a wall for free. Freya doesn't have to marry a giant. And 9 months later, Loki gives birth to this 8-legged horse that he gives to Odin as a gift. Love it.
Oh, man. He really committed for this one.
He took one for the team.
He did.
All right. Next myth. One day, Loki, who has seduced Thor's wife, Sif, decides it's a great idea to cut off all of her hair. This is a terrible move. Her power is in her hair. So to prevent getting murdered by Thor, he proposes that he will get Sif hair so beautiful that it will rival Freya. So Loki heads down to where the dwarves live and offers them a chance to be known as the greatest smiths alive, if only they would forge new hair for Sif. They were like, dude, hold my beer, we can do better than that. So not only do they craft Sif new hair spun from gold, but also a spear for Odin and a ship that could fold up into a compass for Frey, who is about to walk out when another dwarf was like, bro, my brother and I are actually the best smiths and we'll prove it. We'll make items that will be even better than anything those other guys make. So here's a bet. You bring that crap you got there versus what we make, and the gods will get a vote on what's best. If you lose, I get your head. And Loki's like, cool, 6 gifts for free. Well, despite Loki's interference in the form of a fly that keeps biting the dwarves, trying to fuck up their process, they manage to create a flying golden boar for Frey, a golden ring that creates 8 rings just like it every 9 days for Odin, so perpetual wealth. And then a little thing called Mjolnir Thor. Yeah, they made Thor's hammer. So obviously the gods vote that the hammer is the greatest thing ever and Loki's head is forfeit. But Loki wiggles his way out of it by saying that he did not promise his neck. If the dwarf couldn't take his head without harming his neck, then no go. Obviously this is a problem. You need to slit someone's throat to get their head off. So Loki got away with only having his mouth stitched together, which, in this book, causes Loki to develop a serious hatred of the gods. He basically got them all of this good stuff, but because of his chaos status, they sat there and they laughed at him while he got his mouth stitched together. So he's pretty pissed. And next, my personal favorite myth is when Thor has to cross-dress to get his hammer back. So this is a legit myth, and I love it so much. So everyone in Asgard gets piss drunk one night, and some dude just walks in and takes the hammer. Not really a criminal mastermind at work here. Turns out that it was this giant named Thrym. Thrym would be happy to return the hammer in exchange for marrying Freya. This again. Well, Freya again is like, fuck no. And again, Loki's like, I got this. So they decide to dress up Thor like Freya, veil covering his face, and then travels with Loki in the disguise as a bridesmaid to Thrym's palace. So Thor basically has to sit there and listen to Thrym make all sorts of innuendos until he's like, okay, here's the hammer. Let's get the ceremony started. And then Thor just straight up grabs the hammer and murders everyone. Kind of hilarious. This actually doesn't have much bearing on the story. I just think it's great and everyone should know about it. Okay, last story and then we'll get back to the real thing. This one involves Thor and Loki, who are traveling around like besties after Loki got Thor's hammer back, when they picked up 2 kids who were just huge admirers and wanted to go on an adventure with them. So they're like, cool, get in the chariot, let's go. So they travel into the territory of a giant people that they don't really interact with very much. While they're there, they run into a giant who offers to walk with them for a little way. He'll even carry their food for them. So the 5 of them set off, but the gods and the humans are not able to keep up with the giant and instead fall behind. By the time they catch up, the giant's going to bed. It's like, you want your food? It's in my pack. Go get it. So Thor tried to break into the giant's pack to get their food, but he can't. So he gets pissed off and he hits the giant over the head with a hammer like 3 times. And each time the giant wakes up and is like, did a fly land on me? Like, what the fuck? Well, this keeps on until they come upon the kingdom of a guy named Utgard Loki, the giant king of this land. Well, Utgard Loki basically says that you can stay, but only if you're awesome at something. So Loki's like, I'm fucking hungry. I bet I can out-eat all of you. So he and some dude square up on opposite sides of a giant meal, and they just start going to town. And they meet in the middle. But where Loki only ate the actual meat, his opponent ate the meat, the bones, and the goddamn plate. All right, so Fanboy is up, and he goes with racing. And he runs pretty damn fast, but his opponent smokes him 3 times in a row. Fangirl is dismissed because she's a girl and therefore not allowed to participate. Yep.
Of course.
And then Thor is up. Thor is like, drinking contest, let's go. So Utgard Loki hands him a horn of mead and says, the best drinkers can drain this in one go. If you're okay, you can do it in 2. Children can do it in 3. So Thor takes a huge drink. It only goes down like an inch. Takes another go. Red in the face. Basically the same thing. So he's just like, all right, next challenge. Strength, what you got? And Utgard Loki points at a cat and says, pick it up. It's how we test children. So Thor takes a couple stabs at it. He finally gets it up above his head, but the cat still has 3 feet on the ground. Now Thor is pissed and is like, I'll wrestle all of you. So Utgard Loki sends out this old woman. They go back and forth, but the old woman wrestles Thor to his knee. Then Utgard Loki gives them all a pity party with food and stuff, and the next day walks them out of the castle and is basically like, you people are fucking horrifying, don't ever come back. Thor and Loki are like, what? But Utgard Loki explains the whole thing was an illusion. He was actually the giant that had led them there. The food in the pack had been magically sealed. When Thor struck with his hammer, he had actually been hitting a ridge, which now had several hammer-shaped valleys in it. The dude that beat Loki in an eating contest? That was a wildfire aspect, which is why he devoured everything.
Yeah.
The guy who did the races? That dude was the speed of thought. The drinking horn was connected to the goddamn sea, so Thor basically lowered the tide by drinking it. The cat was the world serpent, which is tied to Ragnarok, and Thor almost dragged it out of the ocean. Oh, and that old woman he was wrestling? That was old age. So Thor and Loki drop off the kids, try to never speak of this event again, and of course, everybody hears about it.
Yeah.
And I just love these myths so much. They're ridiculous. Okay, back to the actual story. So throughout all of this, the gods have been less than cool to Loki. Every time something went wrong, they blamed him, but they also needed him to get them out of it. And they pretend to be cool with him, and then they go back to blaming him when the chance arose. Because of this, Loki has been messing with various gods' head every time the opportunity came up. Well, things get a little weirder when Frigg, who is Odin's wife, starts having nightmares about the death of her son Balder. Odin is getting increasingly weird, especially towards Loki. Well, Loki gets fed up with all of this, wondering why, so he goes to figure it out. He speaks to the head of Mimir, who spits out a prophecy at him, and it is not kind. It basically says that Odin will punish Loki and Loki will help bring about Ragnarok. Well, Loki ends up doing exactly what the prophecy says. He helps kill Balder. How? Well, Frigg goes around the world getting an oath from every... I said living here, but that's not quite right. Like, she got oaths out of stones not to hurt Balder. Just like nothing. Nothing's gonna hurt him. Except she misses a tiny little plant known as mistletoe. Loki notices, grabs some mistletoe, and just waits. One day, everyone is throwing a party that Loki has not been invited to, and the favorite party game is to throw random things at Balder to watch them bounce off of him because nothing can hurt him. Throw shit at him and watch it bounce off. Well, Loki appears, gives a dart tipped with mistletoe to Balder's blind brother, who throws the dart, and it hits Balder and kills him. Everyone, in a complete blind rage, tears the blind guy to pieces, and then once everyone sleeps that off, they're all like, this has got to be Loki's fault. Because that's just how they are.
I mean, but it was his fault.
It was, but he had been blamed so many times that he turned it into a self-fulfilling prophecy at that point.
It's usually his fault, though.
It is.
Like in but the in myths, this, like it's usually because he's done something, and then he's like pissed that they blame him, but they do blame him for other stuff.
For stuff that's not him.
Yeah.
So they hunt him down. It takes a while, but they finally find him. And Odin sentences Loki to be tied up in a cave, and then a giant who married one of the Aesir puts a snake nearby that continuously spits poison into his eye. So that's cool. And this goes on for a while until Gullveig, remember her from earlier? Finds Loki through a shared dream. She breaks him out, to use him in her ultimate revenge plot. Use Loki and Loki's weird children, specifically Fenris the Wolf and Jormungandr, the World Serpent, to rain pure destruction down on Asgard. Which they do. Fenris kills Odin, Thor kills Fenris, Jormungandr bites the shit out of Thor with poisonous fangs, Thor kills Jormungandr, then walks a few steps and dies. So Loki, at the end of this, goes charging into Asgard to get rid of the person behind all of that, Mimir. Both Odin and Loki have realized that they were manipulated by this talking head and this stupid prophecy. Had Loki decided to switch sides before the attack on Asgard, the gods would have won. I should mention that Odin did have two of Loki's sons executed, like 13-year-old twin sons executed, and had Fenris chained behind Loki's back, so chances of that happening were pretty slim. So Loki makes sure that Mimir is going to live in his only a head state of living just to piss him off. But then Surt is unleashed. Surt is that big giant lord of chaos that Loki had originally betrayed by leaving Pandemonium to join Odin. That's a mouthful. And he's not the forgiving type. Gullveig, angling to take Loki's original position within Pandemonium, sells him out to Surt. Surt gets a hold of him, puts him and any surviving gods in a prison of hellish tortures, supposedly forever. But there's another part to that prophecy. Things will eventually go back to normal. Humans who have been pretty beat up in the struggle between these mythical creatures will rise again and build a new civilization. Chaos and order always take their turns, so Loki is left hoping that this new turn to order will see him released. And that is where this book ends. There is a sequel, which I do plan on reading at some point, because it sounds interesting, but that is where this book leaves us. So, we'll go to Creative's Corner, and then back to some discussion questions.
Okay. So this week for Creative's Corner, going a bit left field with this pick. It is not book related in any way. It is not history related. None of our normal topics, okay? It's not related to any of our normal topics. We're going to be talking about something cute today. And that is the Instagram profile of, I actually don't know how to pronounce this, but I'm just going to say Bobbert Quail. Okay, Bobbert Quail. And I will be linking this in the show notes. And this is an Instagram account of a quail breeder. I didn't realize that breeding quails was like a thing that people did. If you had told me that, I would have maybe thought, you know, like they're breeding them for like quail eggs, because like people like to eat those for some reason. But apparently you can also breed quails for pets. People have pet quails.
What?
And they're fucking adorable, okay? They're fucking cute. They're so cute. There's one quail in particular on this account that shows up a lot. He's a specific breed of quail, because apparently there are like several breeds of quail that are native to North America. They represent, I think they're in a slightly different position of the family tree than old world quails, like quail you can find in Europe. Yes, I actually did some reading on this yesterday, but I don't remember exactly what type of quail he is. It says on the account, she says it numerous times, but his name is Mozart, and he's just the cutest little baby. I should preface this. I love birds. There's nothing more to say. I just love birds. So I like them. Like, I don't necessarily want any for pets per se. Although, like, I don't know. Like, I've thought about having my own chickens one day or something for eggs. Yeah. I don't know. You know, like that kind of thing. I've never really thought about like owning one, because I have mixed feelings on owning birds, especially exotic birds like parrots. Because, yes, parrots can be bred, but at some point, wild parrots were taken from their homes, and I don't really agree with that, even though I think parrots can be great pets. I don't really know where I stand on that ethically. But apparently people have been breeding quail for like a long fucking time. So, yeah, anyway. But yeah, Mozart is this adorable quail. I love him. He makes that, like, all the quail make, like, the most adorable little peeping noises. Like, even when they're full grown, like, they make these tiniest little squeaks. It's so cute. So, yeah, I would recommend to everyone, if you need a pick-me-up for your day, go check out Bobbert Quail on Instagram. Apparently, in one of the Instagram stories I was watching, like, a couple days ago, like, I just found this account, Mozart is lonely. He doesn't have a girlfriend. Oh. So we need to find him a girlfriend.
Poor Mozart. Why do I care about a quail all of a sudden? God, what have you done?
He's so cute, though. Like, you should go look him up right now.
He's surprisingly pretty.
Yeah, right? Like, his little, like, facial markings. Anyway, that's my creatives corner for the day. It's not really anything creative per se.
You know what? I don't know. In the year 2021 of our Lord, we all need a pick-me-up.
We need cute.
We need cute.
And it is cute. So that is my offering for this week. It is something that I have been very excited about for like about a week now. So,
you know, when I saw Bobbert Quail written down on the script, this was not what I had expected. And
you're like, what is that? It's like when you put down useful charts.
Exactly. Like, I'm going to get you back for that one, bitch. Watch this.
Bobbert Quail.
Bobbert Quail. Where's your useful charts now? They're still useful, by the way.
They are useful.
All right. Well, all right. I am pleasantly surprised by that offering. Thank you.
You're welcome. And listeners, you can send your thanks to our social media or our email. If this brings value and joy to your life.
No. Does this spark joy? If so, send us a comment. All right. You ready to talk about some Norse stuff?
I'm ready. I'm all ready right. to talk about it.
All right, so once again, I am tired and my brain is not working, so I have a few questions for you. But we're going to start out with the obvious one. Were you familiar with any Norse myths before this episode? And if so, which ones?
All right, so this is actually a funny question that you should ask me this. Because my answer changed as you were going through your summary. As a child, I was also interested in Norse mythology in addition to Greek, Roman, Egyptian, but I wasn't like super familiar with anything other than really like Ragnarok, perhaps because I was like very interested in Revelations, like growing up, you know, so just kind of like the idea of like apocalyptic events was very interesting to me. So I think that's why I was kind of drawn towards Ragnarok in particular. And then, of course, it's been a while since I've brought this up.
Oh.
But Stargate, okay?
Oh, there it is! Yay! It's back!
Stargate! It's been so many episodes since I brought up Stargate. And, like, when we first started, it was literally every episode.
Every single episode.
Every single one. But Stargate, okay? In Stargate, there's a race of aliens called the Asgard. And they impersonate Norse gods. So whereas the evil Goa'uld aliens took over like the Egyptian, that's what the Egyptian pantheon was based off, these aliens. Some of the Chinese deities were based off these aliens, etc. The Norse deities were based off of the Asgardians. And it's just really funny because Thor turns out to be like this little tiny gray man.
Yes. You
know? He's like little, they're like classic looking aliens. Like they're gray, they're small, they have like the big eyes and like the giant heads and like all that. So yeah, so that also was, I mean, it's not like it's canon Norse mythology.
No, but
in any way.
Thor is a tiny little gray alien just makes me so happy.
Yeah, it's hilarious because like, and of course they do tie in like Thor's hammer into a couple of episodes and that sort of thing. But the Goa'uld are like so terrified of the Asgard because technologically they're superior. And they're like kind of like the good guys of the galaxy. Yeah. And they like, you know, fight the bad people, except they're also kind of like Dr. Frankenstein type deal where they created like these machines that, anyway, I'm not going to talk about that. It's just really funny because, you know, obviously in Norse mythology, Thor is like depicted as like this really like brawny dude. And then, so they're kind of like anticipating that. And then when they actually meet him, he's like this little tiny gray guy just walking up to them.
I love it so much.
It's great. I love the episodes where the Asgard are in them. But yeah, so that was like more kind of like Norse mythology that I was getting when I was younger. But actually last year, I read Neil Gaiman's Norse mythology. And so I was curious as to why you didn't want to read that, or just in general, I guess. Is it because of your hesitation over Neil Gaiman? Because we've talked about this before. Yeah.
I do not like his writing style. I was hesitant to take up anything with his name attached to it, especially if it was going to go after my love for these dorky, silly myths. That was going to be some fighting, like, energy right there. I was about to take Neil Gaiman out if that's the case.
His version of Norse mythology is probably the finest modern edition of Norse mythology.
Really? Like, he translated it, or he...
I'm not just saying that. It's like, I don't think that he actually did the translations himself.
Mm-hmm.
Although, now that I say that, I don't actually know. I doubt it. But he really does... It's not an interpretation of mythology. It is literally myth. It's like different myths that he has kind of worked with the English translations to adapt. Like, it's not even it's kind of an adaptation. Like, right. Aren't all translations kind of adaptations?
True.
But they are true to the original source material. And they are so good. Because I also have not liked any Neil Gaiman that I've read except for Norse mythology. I was so impressed by it. It really holds on to that, like, very, like, humorous aspect to a lot of these myths. Like, a lot of the stuff that happens is just really funny.
It is.
And that definitely came through. It was excellent. It was excellent. Or at least I thought it was excellent. I know a lot of people think it's great. But yeah, if you are worried about it being Neil Gaiman, like, it doesn't... There isn't, like, any Neil Gaiman, like, spin on this, per se.
That's probably what I was more worried about, is if it was his, like, writing of the myths from, you know, a Neil Gaiman perspective, where he took on the characters. But if it's just, like, you know, the actual myths themselves, probably wouldn't mind it that much. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's just the myths. Okay. So it's not, like, him, like, writing a story using Norse mythology or anything like that. It's just the myths. So with that in mind, because as I was writing up my response to this question, I was like, you know, I know that I loved that book. I really enjoyed reading it, but I can't actually remember any specific myths out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you were going through the summary for this book, I was like, oh, yep, I remember this one. Mm-hmm. Yep, I remember this one too. So I actually remembered most of the ones that you brought up, which was kind of funny.
Yeah, they're great.
I was like, I don't remember any specific ones. And then he started talking and I was like, oh yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thor cross-dressing. I remember this.
So funny. Yeah. So my introduction to a lot of these was actually from Overly Sarcastic Productions. They have done quite a few. They have done quite a few Norse mythology videos, which are absolutely hilarious. If you have not seen them, go check them out. They're pretty quick. It's always great when myths are illustrated, especially, you know, cross-dressing Thor. People throwing shit at Baldur and it just bouncing off of him. Hilarious. Hilarious.
I actually linked to their video on the Iliad last week or 2 weeks ago.
They've got some good quality stuff on that channel. Would 100% recommend if you have not checked it out, despite our ringing endorsements of them. Do it. They're great. My other interactions with Norse mythology are the little bit that pops up in the show Vikings. And then I have read a few of the sagas, which just have minor myths, because I'm going through the historical sagas now, not the...
Right. So I was going to say it's like histories of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with some artistic license.
Exactly. Yes. Less artistic license than you would expect, giving the sagas. It's a lot more, at least the ones that I'm reading right now, which are based in Iceland. So they're a little bit later. They're much more factual, or legendary status is probably where they are.
Rather than myths. Yeah. That makes sense.
They've moved a little bit farther along in that line.
Yeah.
But yeah, then you know, we'll get into the next one, which is everybody's introduction to... Oh, I did want to make the point, though, that I don't know if anybody else caught this, but we were listing off all of the worlds, and it was the worlds of the elves, the worlds of the dwarves, the worlds of the gods. And if that doesn't sound like Tolkien, it's because you're not paying attention. This is exactly where Tolkien has gotten all of his mythology. The name Gandalf is a dwarf name. Like, Tolkien sounds real original until you start digging into Norse mythology and you realize that's exactly where all of that fodder came from for his world building.
It's like Norse mythology and then like Christianity. Mm-hmm. And
a bit of Anglo-Saxon thrown in there. He was a big Beowulf scholar.
Yep, pretty much.
Yep.
There it is.
There it is.
Midgard, Middle Earth, you know.
It's all right there. It's all right there. I think all of the dwarven names come straight out of Norse mythology once you get digging in a little bit.
Yeah, I guess I should have said that for being familiar with Norse myths, but I didn't even think about that.
I just did as I was, like, typing it out. I was like, light elves, dark elves, dwarves, Tolkien, you bastard. I found your stuff. Which we all do this. Anyway,
The Vanir.
Yep.
Yep. So.
Okay, so really on to my next question. And this is going to touch on what we all... were introduced to Norse mythology from.
Yep.
Do you have any favorite movies, Marvel, or books that feature Norse myth components?
All right. So first, I'm actually going to talk about a book or a book series.
Okay.
First, because we're going to get that out of the way. So then I can talk about Marvel movies. Mm-hmm. So I actually have read through maybe about halfway through a series that is actually on Loki.
No.
That is not the Gospel of Loki, obviously. it's like Loki and Ragnarok, but it's like happening, like Ragnarok is happening like in modern times. So there's like a regular human character. I really do question if she's the protagonist. It's either Loki's a protagonist or she is. Anyway, so it's like modern times and Ragnarok is kind of like happening. And it was like a budget buy on Kindle, you know, it was like 6 books for like $2 or something like that.
I love those.
Hence why I got about halfway through and I was like,
got your money's worth out of that.
Do I need to read more of this? It was a lot of books, and I think I kind of just got tired of like more just like weird shit happening. I was like, can we just get to Ragnarok already? Anyway, so I had actually read, what I will say though, is that in the earlier books, there were a lot of chapters that were like Loki's memories from these myths that we talked about. Mm-hmm. So kind of similar to what the Gospel of Loki is doing. But I did find it really interesting, like the different interpretations of the myths that the author presented at the time. You know, everyone like loves Baldur or whatever, because he's like the greatest. But in this story, like Loki is the only one who can see that like Baldur's actually like a horrible person, but he is able to use like his like magic like charm that everyone just thinks everything he does is amazing, but he's actually like horrible, and he's the reason that Loki's children die, and that's why Loki wants to kill Baldur. And so like there are some like the spins on the myths were actually really interesting. And then there was just like scenes from like modern times. I don't know. It was weird. So it was like those aspects of it were really great. And then like there were some really not good scenes. I'm pretty sure that was that series. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, did I read another book entirely? And I'm just thinking that that was that series. I'm pretty sure that I'll have to go check it out in my Kindle, and I'll post that in the show notes. Okay. Like if I find it.
I'm interested now.
But yeah, so like that spin on the old myths was really fascinating in that book. But of course, we can't talk about this without talking about Marvel. And I have to say, Thor Ragnarok is probably, it's up there. Okay, for me, it's up there. Like in terms of my favorite Marvel movie, it's close to number one. I love that movie. It is so good. And let me tell you, The original Thor and Thor Dark World are trash. Okay? They're trash.
They're trash.
So stupid. Okay? I remember watching the first Thor movie because I was really excited for Thor to come out.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember getting through that movie and being like, what was the point? What was the point of that? Like, oh, it's the origin story. So it's just like filler background information for us to get more of this later, you know? And that's how kind of how I felt with the original Captain America too, but that's a whole other conversation. But yeah, it just felt like filler background. And then the Dark World, like that's pretty universally reviled as being a pretty terrible movie. And I agree with that. But Thor Ragnarok, okay. First of all, you had, is it Taika or Tycho? Taika Waititi.
I'm not sure how to say his name.
I'm totally blanking on exactly what his first name is, but he is superb as a director.
Agreed.
That movie was amazing. I just loved like the kind of like personal growth journey that Thor goes on in throughout that movie. Because often he it's so funny like how they characterize him in the Marvel franchise. He goes back and forth between being like this absolute blockhead, like literally rocks for brains, and then being like a very wise character. So there's a lack of consistency there because in the myths, he's fucking dumb.
He is dumb as a rock.
He's so dumb in the actual myths. And that's what's so funny about these myths is that you have Loki who's just like running circles around this guy. But like if Thor ever actually got his hands on him, like Loki'd be dead.
Exactly. Right?
You know? And that's that dynamic that they have is really great. And I think that that plays out really well in the movies too. Not the first two Thor movies, we're ignoring those, but in Thor Ragnarok and then in the other movies that they show up in the Marvel universe, but also just like the loss of there's that movie's also tackling loss too. So like he loses his father and then he also like loses his home. And then of course we get the, at the very end of the movie, we see that he loses like his people as well. He just like loses everything. But yeah, that movie's amazing.
Yes. And Valkyrie, having Valkyrie in there is a badass.
Valkyrie is amazing.
Yes.
And yeah, I obviously it's not trying to be original or true to the source material. It's trying to be somewhat true to the comics.
It's taking,
I hesitate to even say that, but it's taking, yes, it is inspired by the comic version of Thor
rather than
the myths. I do love that movie. So definitely if we're talking favorite inspired by Norse mythology media, that's got to be it. Unfortunately, I haven't actually read the Thor comics because I'm afraid to start reading Marvel. There's so much to catch up on, you know, after
you're not wrong.
70 years or something. I don't know.
Yeah, you gotta like,
there's a lot of comics.
Pick someone and then that's just like that one person that you do all of their
comics. Yeah, just follow that one person.
Like I'm gonna do DC, but I'm only gonna do Teen Titans. That's it.
Yeah.
Don't care about anybody else.
It's just, it's hard to keep up at this point, especially because I haven't been reading them my entire life.
Yeah.
But, so I have no idea, like, their interpretation of the Norse myths. Like, I don't actually know what it's like because I don't know how accurate the movies are to the comics.
Yeah, I haven't read the comics either. I think the introduction that I had to the Marvel version of Thor was we went to whatever was, I don't know if it was Iron Man that had the post credit scene where the Thor's hammer showed up, but whatever movie that was where the post credit scene was the hammer showed up. I went with two of my childhood best friends and Laura, who is just a huge comic nerd. I thought she freaking had a seizure. She got so excited just from seeing a little clip of the hammer. Like, she was on it. And me and Amy are sitting there like, do we need to call someone? Like, are you okay? And she was like, it's Thor! So, like, that was my first, like, oh, Thor's part of this universe thing. So, yeah, like, I still have not actually seen either of the first two Thor movies all the way through. I've seen bits and pieces and I'm like, nah, I'm good.
I did
see Thor Ragnarok, and I agree with everything that you've said. It's great. It's hilarious.
It's so funny.
It's so funny. Just
it makes me cry, too, though.
Like, I didn't cry.
I think I'm trying to remember when it was. I have to go back and watch it now, of course. I'm pretty sure it's when his dad dies.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as you get the dad dying, it's always just a really rough scene.
Which, like, I mean, Odin is still, like, a fucking asshole in the movies, too.
Odin's not a good guy.
No, he's not. And, you know, at least in the movies, they don't really portray him as one. I think he often comes across as one because he's just like, oh, wise old man. Mm-hmm. But then they don't shy away from the fact that, like, when Hela is telling Thor about, like, her history and how, like, Odin was like, yeah, let's kill everyone so we can, like, you know, form the however many realms, you know.
That and, is true to the original myths.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. That is true to the original myths because Odin is ruthless
fucking asshole. Yeah, the other show, I'm trying to think of the name. I've been sitting here trying to think of the name of the show. It's the Neil Gaiman one that's on Stars with
American Gods.
That's the one. No, yeah. Yeah, that's
American
what,
Gods.
American Gods. That's got Odin in it.
Does it really? I didn't mm-hmm. know that.
Yeah, the main guy is, his name is like Shadow or something like that. And then he gets sort of like taken under the wing of a guy whose name is Mr. Wednesday.
Mm, yeah.
So it's Odin, like, making this guy go on a cross country mm-hmm. journey, meeting all of these other various gods that have come over from the old world. And some from the new. I've only watched the first season of that. It was significantly better than I was expecting it to be, as Neil Gaiman material does tend to make better viewing experiences than reading.
That's good to know, actually, because Morgan and I tried watching Good Omens,
mm-hmm.
and we did not really like that at all.
I haven't tried Good Omens yet, but at least the first season of American Gods is good.
Okay, well, that's good to know, because I that was like the Neil Gaiman book that I was just like, I'm still going to try reading it because even though I don't really like Neil Gaiman, I'm still going to try it because everyone talks about it and how great it is. But maybe I can watch the TV show. maybe that's the only concession I have to make here.
I think you would like it. Yeah, actually, yeah. I think you would. And then, like, I think Kristen Chenoweth shows up in one episode as, like, what's her name? The Easter goddess. Is it Esther or something like that? The original Easter goddess, and then she gets all pissed off because Jesus has shown up and taken over her holiday.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know what pagan deity had that holiday before.
It is a woman.
I don't remember. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that would make sense.
There's some great material in there that I think you would very much appreciate.
That sounds fun.
It's not bad. I don't know about season two, though. You're on your own there.
I'm trying to think. I don't think I can think of anything else. I guess if we are talking favorite books, I will once again plug Neil Gaiman's Norse Mythology because it was great.
There's a whole lot of Neil Gaiman in this episode.
Yeah.
On an episode that's not even about Neil Gaiman. Gaiman, I don't know.
It's not about Neil Gaiman. And we both don't really like
him. And we both don't like him.
It's not that I don't like him. I just find that his writing style is not to my taste.
Indeed.
You know? I've got nothing against the guy. I will give him his clearly well-earned success. I mean, he's very popular.
And he always defends libraries. So, like, a good guy in my book. Yes. But
yes.
I do not appreciate his writing style. Content seems to be great in other formats, but not a fan.
That's true. I do love Stardust.
I love Stardust. Movie. It's adorable.
It's so good. It's so good.
It's so cute.
It is so cute. It's that so is cute. Like a comfort movie for me.
Oh, yeah.
It's just to go back and watch Stardust.
Right. It's a bad day. Do I want to watch Pride and Prejudice or do I want to watch Stardust?
Stardust, yeah.
I think it's all I got.
I think I'm Norsed out for today.
Well, so. I don't think that I'm Norsed out, but I think I'm tired of talking about it, so.
Yeah.
Go We're watch both some tired. Videos about it instead.
Yeah. 2 hours later, Paige is on YouTube.
Exactly.
All right, so that is our episode on The Gospel of Loki by Joanne Harris. Thank you for listening. If you liked today's episode, please do let us know. Give us a subscribe, give us a rating, give us a review. tell your friends about it. And if you want to keep up with the podcast, you can always follow us on social media. We have a Twitter and an Instagram, both of them at big_book_energy. We also have a website, bigbookenergy.com, where you can find the occasional blog post and also links to all of our platforms and such. And finally, if you want to support the podcast and get awesome books at the same time, maybe The Gospel of Loki sounds like your kind of book, you can head on over to our bookshop store, which is bookshop.org/shop/bigbookenergy, and purchase a copy for yourself, and you will be supporting us and small independent booksellers at the same time.
And we also have a Patreon account. In fact, we have a new patron that we need to say hello to, a new ninja, Crystal. Welcome to the BBE Club.
Yay, Crystal.
If you would also like to become a member of our BBE tiers, you will get access to longer versions of our bonus episodes. This particular go-around, we are doing Phone a Friend. So far, we have had both of my sisters on. One of them had a therapy session. One of them had an argument. It was a great time. Had by all.
It was a great time.
So, if that sounds cool to you, head on over to patreon.com/bigbookenergy and pick whichever tier suits you best.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time. Bye!
Bye. And a ship that could fold up into a compass for Frey. It's not a shit. It's a ship.
I was like, what?
A shit that folds up like a compass for Frey. Okay, let me just change that. Okay.